Welcome to Halacha in a Year, where we can get to learn all the most relevant halacha through the prism of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. You are listening to Rabbi Yaakov Tramp. This shiur is kindly sponsored by the Moshe Group and CA in Zuchus of Rivka Bela Bas Nechama Shifra and in honor of Rabbi Tramp. Today we start learning the halachas of Yom Kippur. This is Siman Kuf Lamed Gimel 133 in the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, and this is part one because there are a lot of halachas. We're going to be dealing with today five topics, that is general restrictions, restriction of washing, and not the restrictions on anointing and marital relations, wear any other shoes, and with sick people, pregnant women, and nursing women. Let's jump straight in. General restrictions. So what prohibitions apply on Yom Kippur? So it's forbidden to eat, drink, wash, anoint, wear shoes, and have marital relations. What is the melacha status, the work status on Yom Kippur? So it is like Shabbos, not like Yom Tov. So it has all the prohibitions of Shabbos, is not like a Yom Tov. Rosh Hashanah is like a Yom Tov, but Yom Kippur is like Shabbos. When does it begin and end? So the prohibitions begin a little bit before sunset. That's the extra Yom Kippur we have to add. And a little bit after nightfall, after Tesach Kochav, and the stars come out. On Matzah Yom Kippur, there's a mitzvah Tosefis. When you add on to Yom Kippur, we should not be getting in just by the wire and not leaving just by the wire as well. It needs to be that there's extra on both sides. Is it permitted to touch food on Yom Kippur? Interestingly enough, the Kitzur records some allow it and some don't, but he says ideally one should avoid touching food. The Ramah in Shulchan Aruch says that we are generally make illness. If a person needs to handle food for young children, one is allowed to do this and is not a problem actually coming into contact with it. We move to our next topic, and that is the restriction of washing. I may not wash or bathe on Yom Kippur. So what about Netilas Yadayim? So when one wakes up in the morning, one can wash till the knuckle, and if there's mucus by one's eye, one can remove it without the remaining water, but that's all. One's not allowed to wash one's face, one's not allowed to fully wash one's hands throughout the process of Yom Tov. What about for davening? So one is allowed to wash hands for davening, again, up to the knuckle, but if one is washed at the beginning, one should, and one's not left shul, and one's not fallen asleep, then one should not wash again for Ne'ila, Mincha, or Maariv, because then, let's say one did it from earlier, it is going to cover through all the way. What if I got dirty? So if necessary washing is permitted, but it must be kept to a minimum. So if one, let's say one touched a banister and there was mud on it, so one can wash one's hand off, but only what's necessary. How should Kohanim wash before Birkas Kohanim if they didn't wash fully in the morning? So let's say a Kohen wakes up in the morning, washes till the knuckle, comes to Shul, is now doing Birkas Kohanim. The halacha is they need to wash all the way till the wrist for Birkas Kohanim. So if they did the morning and they said they bracha till the knuckle, then they do the Birkas Kohanim, they do it all the way till the wrist, they may say, it must say a new bracha. The Mishnah Berurah points out that this is not our practice, that a new bracha is not said, but the Kitzur suggests that it is a better idea for the Kohen to wash till the wrist, the fuller washing in the morning with the bracha, to avoid this concern. Who may wash on Yom Kippur? So a sick person may wash normally, and a young woman who's got married within 30 days may wash her face on Yom Kippur. What should one do if one has a nocturnal emission? A man has a nocturnal emission on Yom Kippur, so if it's still moist, he needs to wipe it dry with a cloth. If it's dry, one should wash it, only the soiled areas, but he may not use a cloth because it may come to squeeze it out. What can one go to the mikveh? So usually one should go to mikveh in such a situation, but immersion on Yom Kippur is not allowed, even if one goes every other day of the year. What else can one do? So that person should consult a Torah scholar for guidance and for a way to find forgiveness. It's considered a very bad omen for a man to have a nocturnal emission on the night of Yom Kippur. It is worth noting that many of the posts can, there are certain protocols as to what to do in such a situation. It is limited to a situation where it's not related to a physical cause, like eating the wrong foods or sleeping in the wrong position. We move on to the next topic, and that is anointing and marital relations. Can I put oil on or any ointment or deodorant just to remove dirt? The answer is no. Anointing is forbidden even partially or just to remove dirt or smells. What about a sick person? A sick person may anoint as usual. In the place where healthy people do not usually put on any, we forget creams because of spread the problem of the malaria, but it's an oil, which is not a problem. If people do not usually put on oils, unless they're sick, then there might be a problem of the sick person doing this, because it would be otherwise clearly medicinal. Taking medicine just for regular ailment is not allowed on Shabbos and Yom Kippur. What are the restrictions of marital relations on Yom Kippur? So it's forbidden not only just to have marital relations, but throughout the course of Yom Kippur, day and night, there's a prohibition of even the harchakos, of distancing oneself from one's spouse throughout the course of Yom Kippur to avoid even coming close to marital relations. We move into the fourth concept, and that's wearing leather shoes. What kind of shoes are prohibited? So leather shoes obviously are prohibited, but there is an opinion that even any shoes are not allowed as well. Although we follow the majority opinion that only leather shoes are prohibited, one should be stringent to wear shoes, not to wear shoes indoors, as is suggested, or to wear less comfortable non-leather shoes as well. Today, when people are wearing these unbelievably comfortable sneakers, it's better than leather shoes, better than Shabbos shoes. That's not what's intended over here. The Kitzur goes so far as to say that if, let's say, leather is all one has and one has to walk through mud or out in the streets, then one should switch one's shoes left to right, right to left, or to wear a shoe without a heel and remove it before coming into the building. It's a very serious thing, so it's best to take less comfortable non-leather shoes would be better. May one stand on leather, on a mat, on Yom Kippur? The answer is standing on pillows or leather pads is permitted, except during the Shemone Esrei when one should not be standing on anything. If one's cold, may one stand on grass? To our people who are standing barefoot on Yom Kippur. Who may wear shoes despite the prohibition? So anybody who's sick, a person who has an injured foot, or a woman within 30 days of childbirth are allowed to wear shoes, leather shoes, regularly. We finally move to our last topic, and that is sick people, pregnant, and nursing women. Must pregnant and nursing women fast? The answer is yes, they must, and they must fast the entire day. They're deemed as healthy people unless it is a high-risk pregnancy or there is a problem. There's a significant concern which might be life-threatening. What if the nursing mother's child is critically ill? So if the child, the infant, can only nurse from her and she won't be able to provide enough milk if she fasts, she should not fast because of the risk of the child's life. What if a pregnant woman craves food on Yom Kippur? So if a woman says, I must eat when she's pregnant, or her color visibly changes, there is a concern she might be in Sakonis Nefashos, in Pikuach Nefesh, she might be in danger if she doesn't eat. So here the steps are taken. First, somebody should whisper to her in her ear that it is Yom Kippur. If this calms her down, brings her back to the ground, and she realizes that this is Yom Kippur, then that's fine. If she does not, she still desperately needs food, she is craving something, then a drop of food should be given. If that's not enough, then she should be given less than a halachic shiur. We'll discuss that in a moment. If that is still insufficient, then she may eat normally. The same applies to a person who's overcome by the smell and turns gravely ill because of this as well. How does halachas apply to a woman who gave birth or a critically ill person? So the rules of eating, drinking, and chil Yom Kippur are similar to those of chil Shabbos. So let's say that a person's complexion changes and they need food, then one gives it to them even if they don't ask for it, if we're concerned for their life. And if they ask for it, even though their complexion hasn't changed, and we go through this procedure, then we still do give it to them. What if the doctor says they are fine, but the person says, I really need food? In that case, even though the doctor says they're fine, we listen to the person because the person's aware of their own needs, as long as they're reminded that it is Yom Kippur, so they obviously understand what's the stakes are. What procedure should be followed when giving people food on Yom Kippur? So people who are in a dangerous situation, meaning a person is in a life-threatening situation, not a difficult situation, a life-threatening or potentially life-threatening situation, in that case, they should be fed in shiurim, which means to say that they should have less than the amount of food within the spaced out time so that the eatings do not connect to each other to make it an eating above the amount, above the bar of eating. However, you should say to the person beforehand, if this is not enough, if you still feel in danger, or if the doctor's concerned this is not enough nutrition or hydration for the person, then they eat normally. We go to shiurim first, which is therefore a rabbinic transgression, not a biblical one. What are the shiurim? So practically, it's first theoretically, it is 2/3 of an egg size for eating, which is slightly less than a ksovas agasa, which is the shiur for Yom Kippur. And then pause, which is the amount of time of kedei achilas pras, and then repeat. For drinking, it's less than a mouthful of water at a time, and pauses kedei achilas pras, or the time it takes to drink a revias. That's meloi logmav is one mouthful. This is how it works. So what does that look like practically? So practically, it works as follows. The shiur for eating is 1.5 fluid ounces. It's an objective shiur, 44 millimeters. And one can use a shot glass and like a 1 ounce shot glass and fill up 1.5 of them. And that would be the volume of food that can be compressed into them would be the amount that can be eaten. So you can eat that amount with spacings of 9 minutes between each of the eatings. Okay, so one sets up the amount of food, one sees it gets 1.5 fluid ounces or 44 milliliters, cubic centimeters, and one has that at spaces of larger than 9 minutes between them. So one's having less than a shiur and greater amounts than kedei achilas pras on the outer end, or the most machmir shita in terms of length, which means to say that therefore these eatings do not join to each other, so one has never gone above the bar of the biblical prohibition in this respect. When it comes to drinking, it's actually a subjective measure, so it's not objective. Meloi logmav is the amount that fills one cheek. So what's best to do for such a person is for them on Erev Yom Kippur to fill up their cheek with water, spit it out into a cup, see how much it reaches, draw a line on the cup in such a place, and then when on Yom Kippur necessary to do this, fill up to below that line and have it with 7 minute intervals, with over 7 minute intervals between each of them. The eating and the drinking do not join together, so therefore you could be on two separate timelines for the eating and the drinking for this as well. What if a person wants to fast longer, but if they do, they will need to break it fully? But instead of that, they could have less than a shear, all the pachos mikashir in the early part of the day, not necessitate a full breaking. Rav Moshe Feinstein paskins that it's better to have small amounts rather than to have a full breaking necessary later. What should be done if someone is ravenously hungry to the point of sickness? So if a person's eyesight starts failing or their vision is blurred, then they should be given food until their eyesight is restored, because that's a very dangerous sign. May those in danger be fed forbidden food on Yom Kippur? The answer is yes. If no permitted food is available, they need meat, and there's no kosher meat, one can give them treif meat, preferably less than a kazayas at a time, if that is sufficient to restore their health. What brachas apply when eating on Yom Kippur for medical reasons? So the person feels calm, they should say brachas before and after eating, but not doing kiddush, even if it's Shabbos Yom Kippur. In Birkas HaMazon, one does add in Yal Levi Yavoi and Ritzei if it's Shabbos. The Yal Levi Yavoi includes Yom HaKippurim Azeh, but if one didn't eat it, one did not say it, one does not repeat the Birkas HaMazon, since there's no obligation to eat on Yom Kippur, of course. And what is the role of the doctor? It's really important, this last point over here, is that the halacha is that a person who's in a case of sakonas nefoshos, in danger of their life, or sofek sakonas nefoshos, or there's a concern that may lead to danger of their life, those are the types of people who may break the fast on Yom Kippur. Not a person who's in great discomfort, not a person who is bedridden, those are not sufficient grades. When a doctor is consulted, they are consulted not to paskin shirim. Sometimes I've had a situation where doctors say, speak to the rabbi and tell them to do shirim. That's not the doctor's role. He needs to stay in his lane. His question is also not to recommend to play it safe just because of liability. That's not the doctor's role. The doctor's role is to assess, is this person in a case of sakonas nefoshos, or not? Will this diminish the person's lifespan? Will this deteriorate the person's health that could take off days of their life, God forbid? That is their question. Once they get to that question, the rabbi will then paskin. This is a general framework with many, many, many more complicated halachas. So do not paskin from this. This is just a framework of reference for shailas to be asked in order to adjudicate this very serious halacha, because it is more important for a person to stay in bed in an air-conditioned place and fast in Yom Kippur than it is to do anything else, not to go to shul, not to be around one's kids. It is most important when fast, it is mandated from the Torah, and therefore only if a person is in a case of sakonas nefoshos, having consulted with the doctor as such, and then spoken to the rabbi, does this whole system kick in, and therefore shailas should be asked. So this we conclude. Have a wonderful meeting.